From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Ooh, hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever non-ending, ever cape-wearing, ever beanie-wearing, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
How's it going, Bob?
Hey.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. Can't complain.
This is strange, because we're in a new year.
It's a new year, a new decade, although some say not necessarily a new decade. Some people say 2021 is now, but I say 2020.
2020 is the new decade.
Yeah, 2020.
I haven't seen you since the holidays.
Yeah, you know what? It's had a very joyous holiday season, of course, and a good solstice so far. Nice weather. Can't complain.
Calm before the storm. I hope that's not the case.
No.
No pun intended.
Hopefully not. But, you know, it's a new year, a new decade, new Bob After Dark.
It's still the same Bob.
Same Bob After Dark, but a new season of Bob After Dark.
If this is your first time ever watching Bob After Dark or listening to us in podcast land, Panic, would you like to tell us what Bob After Dark is all about?
Yes, it's going deep into the lore and mysteries of the unknown.
That's really good.
Thank you.
So Bob After Dark, we talk about legends, lore, the supernatural. I have some creepy, weird, and paranormal news of the week that I like to share. And we usually take whatever lore of the week is going on and we discuss it. And it's usually some sort of topic of the week. Sometimes we have guests, sometimes we don't. But if you're listening to us in podcast land, specifically, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, make sure you leave us a 5-star review with a nice little comment. We read every one of them and we very much appreciate that. Make sure you share and like with your friends and all of that good stuff.
And Bob, I'm just glad you recovered. You were a little under the weather there.
Let's start with you because we haven't seen you in a hot minute.
Well,
let's get your holiday update. Let's get your updates.
Yeah, you know what? Like I said, can't complain at all. Had a nice little holiday season there. Had a good Christmas. Had a good New Year's, of course. I was out there in full force in your city, Bob. Whiting, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
For New Year's. Did the pierogi drop over there, so that was pretty fun. And, you know, no one likes the... You talk about weird and strange places. Whiting is one of those places, but for all the right reasons.
Whiting is the cool Portland place of Indiana. We always had a slogan, keep Whiting weird.
That fits, too. They're definitely that, to say the least. But, yeah, had a great time out there. And like I said, we can't complain with this weather, Bob. I feel like I should
at least in
shorts.
The Midwest. We have fans that are listening from like elsewhere and they're probably like, well, the weather's not that good. Here in the Midwest, we have a very weird winter going on right now, but I'm not complaining.
No, you can't complain. You see, if you complain about this, I always say this, Bob, every day above the polar vortex is a good winter day indeed.
I would say so. My holidays weren't too bad.
Yeah.
My Christmas went okay. My Yule went great. My New Year's, I rang it in with the Des Plaines Ghostbusters, Dr. Ben Vanerson. Me and the Queen of the Night, we rang it in. We had a good holiday. And then, right after the holiday, sickness came in and nearly killed me.
At your doorstep.
Oh, it was awful. I was sick for about a week. I still have a cough, but it's not that bad. I kicked off Bob After Dark last week, what we were supposed to, with me being deathly ill. I went to the doctor. I had 103.5 fever. Apparently, that's near fatal. I had no idea. And the doctor says, you have the flu.
Now, when was the last time you had the flu?
Never. I've never had the flu.
You never had the flu?
I had mono once.
Okay.
But I never had the flu, so it's completely new.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, I'm okay. I'm alive, though. It's a plus. And more Bob After Dark. We are kicking off the Bob After Dark Tour 2020 this week. I will be in Columbus, Ohio for OhioCon. I'll be speaking Saturday at 9 p.m. in one of the rooms. I have the information up on the Facebook page. So if you're in Ohio, make sure, and specifically the Columbus area, come on out and come see me or make plans to come see me during the week. I'll be visiting some of the local haunted sites. I'll be around the convention sign. There's also a magicians convention going on. I might try to make an appearance over there at some point, and Columbus during the same time, which is kind of cool. But minus that, so we're kicking off the tour, also officially announcing today on Bob After Dark, we have officially been accepted to Anime Milwaukee for the second year for a panel, which I'm very excited about.
How about that? That was a rocking time. And
you weren't there. It was just me and Ben.
Which Wisconsin one was I at?
Wisconsin Comic-Con.
And this is?
Was Anime Milwaukee.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be at
I'm sure it's still delightful.
Anime Milwaukee was a blast. That was my first panel I ever did. They gave me a chance to have a panel there, and I did it, and it was a lot of fun. So they invited me back. I accepted, so I'll be at Anime Milwaukee 2020. That's the second weekend of February. And then me and you will be at C2E2 2020 as well.
Yeah,
with Anthony. We're missing rolling. Anthony this week. Anthony's dealing with a lot of hardship right now, which is where we're going to start with the show here in a moment. So we are missing Anthony this week. Where Anthony hopefully will be back next week. Where he's going to be taking just a short break to kind of take on some stuff that's going on. Before we begin, I just want to say my intentions, my everything goes out to Australia and the tragedies that are going on there right now. Because of Anthony, where he's from is Australia. He's dealing with a lot right now. So we're going to give Anthony some time, and we are going to make sure he gets whatever he needs. We're going to be doing a fundraiser on Bob After Dark for the survivors and the rebuilding process for Australia.
Good.
We're going to get that information up here in the next couple days. So bear with us. You'll be able to donate right to a charity of Anthony's choice. It's going to go straight to the Australian Relief Fund. So make sure you guys get a chance to donate, and it'll do it good. So Anthony, wherever you are right now, we hope you're doing okay. And again, to all of our Australian fans, because we have a lot of you guys, just know that you are in our thoughts, you're in our prayers, you're in our intentions. We're thinking about you guys. And that's a horrible tragedy, because we talk a lot about things that go bump in the night here. We talk about things that scare you, but sometimes the scariest things in the world is reality. And things that are right in front of us, and what they're going through right now is a legitimate tragedy. So
indeed, I mean, you look at the stories coming from there. I mean, the people, the lives lost. I think they're saying almost a billion animals, Bob. That's insane.
That's insane, man. I was talking to Anthony a little bit about it throughout the week, just kind of checking in with him. If you guys get a moment just to send Anthony over a message, he reads all the Bob After Dark messages. He'd be really happy to hear from you guys. He was telling me that it's horrible, because, I mean, our fans that are out there, like Anthony's mom and Anthony's family, they're dealing with the best way they can, which is surviving. Mm. So I just wanted to give a shout out and just tell you guys in Australia, we're thinking about you guys. We really appreciate every one of you. We love you, and just know that we're going to take care of you in the best way we possibly can.
Indeed, can't say it better myself.
Yep. All right, let's move right into the show, where we're going to be doing we don't start with the lore of the week here, but could talk about the lore of the week.
I thought you were mixing it up this year.
No, we're not. It starts with the news. We do the news, then we do the lore of the week. Because I'm going to have kicking off my convention scene 2020 at OhioCon this week, we're going to be talking about one of Ohio's most haunted locations, the Ohio State Reformatory. Was funny enough, one of the most haunted prisons in America, and the set for The Shawshank Redemption.
Ah, the classic movie.
You've seen it.
Shawshank. That was with
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman.
It's a great movie.
What's the other actor in that? He's kind of famous.
Yeah, I would say so. By the way, guys, so let's dive right into the news of the week, and minus other tragedies, we're going to be kicking off this week's news with some more tragic news, and then hopefully we'll get in some positive stuff. I hate to announce, but we do have to announce a passing of a famous paranormal investigator, TV psychic, kind of a Bob After Dark-esque person, Derek Ackroyd. He passed away at 69 years old in that past couple days ago, and you might not know Derek's name if you're not involved with the paranormal community, but Derek ran one of TV's biggest paranormal shows before there was an influx. You couldn't turn, you know, these days you turn on the Travel Channel and there's 75 different shows on about the paranormal, or you could turn on Bob After Dark Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Central. I mean, there's a lot of paranormal stuff on, but back in the 2000s, early 2000s, late 90s, we didn't have a lot.
No.
Unsolved Mysteries, you'd have, what's the other one? We'd have things like Unsolved Mysteries, and we'd have other Scariest Places on Earth.
That was a big one.
That was a big Linda Blair hosted that one. There were shows, but there wasn't a lot like we have now. Derek was the host of the what was called Most Haunted. It was TV's Most Haunted, and he just went around and talked about different haunted places. He was on many, many TV segments dating back from 96. He wrote books. He was kind of a big deal in the paranormal community. His big claim to fame, though, was he was the one who spearheaded Michael Jackson, the live seance, where they tried contacting Michael Jackson's spirit.
How did that go again?
I don't know. I actually didn't even know about it until I was researching it. But Derek performed if any of the fans in the chat have seen Derek's seance with Michael Jackson, that's
of all the ghosts, I guess you'd go for Michael Jackson's ghost. Maybe not my first choice, but still a good choice.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Derek. May your spirit live on.
And, yeah.
You know, Derek was a firm believer in the afterlife, obviously. Mm-hmm. So if anybody like in the paranormal world, myself included, yourself included, you know, the best we can hope for is some kind of afterlife, right?
Yes.
And in Derek's case, I really hope there is. And I hope that his spirit is living on and doing some really fun stuff, and I hope he's enjoying the afterlife.
Indeed. You also wonder, like, when the ghost hunter passes away, like, what do they become ghosts themselves? They'll be kind of like a full circle there in a way, kind of, right?
I always wondered if George Norrie ever had, like, experiences with Art Bell from Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
I'll have to research that, or we had the... I don't know, that's a good question.
Can we call in his show? We'll ask him.
Coast to Coast, we're kind of like Coast to Coast, like mother show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're on before him.
Yeah, he's on at midnight.
And he gets syndicated through WJOB here. So I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. Has any paranormal investigators ever come back to come say something to another investigator?
Interesting.
I've never heard of a situation like that. If anybody knows one, let us know. But yeah, you could definitely chime in and let us know. That'd be great.
I'll
tell you what, if I go before you, I'll come back and say hi.
Okay, perfect.
I'll come haunt whoever's hosting Bob After Dark after I'm gone.
So we still call Bob After Dark, though, no matter who is hosting.
Is it going to be Bob After Dark?
Bob After Dark with so-and-so. So, yeah, name whoever. You could get the... Tell us who you want to pick as your host after...
I'm assuming you and Anthony would continue with Bob After Dark if I, like, wasn't around.
I would have to be more, I have to go, but would I have to go out and actually experiment with things or no?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I guess so.
I mean, you could stay the producer.
Yeah.
But, well, thank you for at least keeping the name Bob After Dark. The branding. We might as well.
Yeah, it's too late now to change the t-shirts, so we got to keep them.
Fair enough. Yeah. We're getting more t-shirts in, by the way. In the next
How about
weeks.
That?
Yeah. All right, well, next bit of news is actually right here in Chicago. I have a weird humanoid sighting.
A different one.
Not Mothman.
Not Mothman. Not Mothman. Mothman has been very popular the past few weeks.
The total count was 12 from October to December 2019. We had 12 Mothman sightings all up and around O'Hare. This one's a bit on the strange side. This is what they're saying is a mantis humanoid creature. A couple was performing a small Wiccan Yule ceremony. Supposedly they were doing a spell for prosperity. When all of a sudden they heard a weird buzzing noise and a weird kind of presence about them. And when the girl looked up, she said she saw about what she described as a 7.5-8 foot tall creature, very slender, and had mantis like appearances. At first she thought they manifested Slender Man, and they thought Slender Man was coming after them. And eventually they ran out and they reached out to the blog that I have this actual article up on the Bob After Dark page. You guys can go check it out. The people reached out to the blog and told them about the sighting. She said they were completely sober while performing the ritual.
Good. That's a good thing always.
That is a good thing. But They're smoking weed.
Oh, well, that's going to throw everything off. That's going to throw everything off right there.
Okay, look, I'm around the witchy community enough in my life. I've been around seances, I've been around rituals, I've been around spell work, I've seen it, man. I'm a part of it myself, you know. I know what consists of. And I mean, I was talking it over with one of my with a couple of my spiritual friends that practice and whatnot, and gonna keep their identities just under wraps for their own sake, but I was asking them what they thought about it, and if the story is true, I've narrowed it down to two potential things. One, spirit found two witches performing some sort of ritual, and it's basically like a beacon for spirits, and it just happened to manifest looking like a mantis, and it was trying to call out to them for whatever reason. Theory number two is it's some sort of cryptid. There are tales of mantis-like creatures that have been told specifically right around like the Afro-Caribbean like areas in the world where the mantis-type creatures were like kind of like were-mantises, like that episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Do we have a caller on the line?
You know what we do? It's Pat from Ghostly.
Oh, if this isn't probably one of the better surprises I've had. Everybody, we have a celebrity on line one. We have Pat, the host, one of the two hosts of the Ghostly Podcast. Hello, Pat.
Hey, who's the celebrity? I'm dying to hear him.
It's you.
Oh, geez. Oh, wow. Well, actually, I was calling because of your mantis thing. Oh, by the way, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It's glad to hear your voice, too, there, Pat.
Yeah. So, if they're smoking weed, could this mantis thing actually be the Mothman?
That's what my last point was. I'm actually surprised you're calling in with a legitimate question. I thought you were going to call and tell me that they experienced a microclimate.
Yeah, it could have been a microclimate, too, though. You never know.
You were one of the first people I shared the article with.
And yeah.
I was like, oh, man and woman had a microclimate sighting. Like, yep, that's definitely a microclimate.
But when you shared it with me, I thought that instantly. I was like, that could be the Mothman.
Now, Pat, how far does your skepticism go? Do you think that there is a Mothman stalking Chicago currently?
Okay, so no, I do not think that there is a Mothman, but I am more open to that than I am to ghosts.
That's fair. So,
because, I mean, there is a probability, a slight probability, of there being a unknown species, you know, out there. Now, in Chicagoland area, I doubt that, but, you know, that's my skepticism coming out.
So do you think that what we experienced is the flying humanoid Mothman-esque creature?
Well, that's what I am asking you.
I don't know. I'm going, because of the ritual and because of what they were doing, I'm going to say no.
The ritual's got nothing to do with that.
Well, no, but what I'm getting at is,
yeah,
ritual is a beacon for somebody to kind of come through, right? A wandering spirit, and just happen to manifest into that. That would be my, I don't think it's related to the Mothman sightings. I think it's just a coincidence. So maybe the ritual manifested a spirit. Maybe there's a were-mantis hanging around, or maybe they just had a bad trip. For what I know, marijuana doesn't cause hallucinations like that. Unless it's laced. Oh, what are you saying back there?
You never
Panic?
Know, Bobby.
That's fair.
Could have been some of that wacky tobacco.
Yeah,
you know?
That's fair.
Well, I had one more thing, too, actually. I keep meaning to ask you this. Have you seen those pictures of the baby owl where they say that they look like aliens?
I have, and that just happens.
And maybe that could be this, too. Maybe that could be this Mothman.
The Mothman or the mantis?
Both.
Well, the mantis is been described as 8 feet tall. Those baby owls are not 8 feet tall.
But they were, you know, high. So, I mean, you know, when I used to get high, things looked a lot bigger than what they appeared. So
that's fair.
You never know.
It's possible that's what we have going on is a baby owl that looks like a Mothman, that looks like an alien, that looks like a mantis man.
Yeah.
But I feel like skepticism is reaching for something there, Pat.
Hey, I'm just enjoying what you're saying. That's all.
Now, Pat, before we move on to the next caller, you have something a little different up going on right now with the podcast. If you want to share it on the show, you guys have something on YouTube. Yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah. So, on our YouTube channel, which we usually just, have episodes with, you know, no video, we actually have a video up this time in support of our new episode on tarot readings.
Did you indeed get a tarot reading done, Pat?
Yes. Rebecca, my co-host of Ghostly Podcast, she actually read the cards for Ghostly's future.
That's exciting. And I'm sure...
No, it wasn't. It was actually terrifying because it looks like we're not going to be around too much longer. So who knows?
Maybe Pat, I have an open seat here next to me. You could come on Bob After Dark whenever you'd like.
Well, thank you very much.
Of course...
But yeah, youtube.com/ghostlypodcast.
Thank you so much for calling in, Pat. We appreciate you, and many good lucks to Ghostly over this next year and the decade.
Oh, yeah. Happy New Year, man.
You too, sir. All right, but Panic, we got another caller on the line, or we have two callers on the line.
We got a couple here. We'll go to John first.
John, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for calling
in. Hey, good evening. Good evening, Bob. Happy New Year to you and your family.
Ah, you too, John. How have you been?
Oh, pretty good. I'm glad to hear that you're getting better. And thoughts and prayers out to Anthony and, you know, all the people with the devastation that happened there in Australia. Sad news, but I'm sure they'll come out on top of that.
Yes, yes, yes. What's on your mind tonight, John?
I was at the movies the other day, and I thought about you when I seen the new Ghostbuster movie.
Yes.
Are you a fan of the Ghostbuster movies?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, John. 1,000%. And I am very much
excited.
Even
the new ones, Bob?
Oh, yeah. I loved Ghostbusters 2016. I got to go to L.A. to go see the premiere of it. And I'll be in L.A. hopefully again for the 2021 to go see it. And, of course, I'm excited about it.
So, Dan Aykroyd, do you know a little bit about his past with Paranormal Activity?
Oh, do I? Dan Aykroyd and I had a full-blown conversation this past summer at Ghostbusters Fan Fest where we talked a little bit about his work. He's third-generation paranormal investigator. His grandfather wrote tons of books on the subject. I'm familiar.
Yeah, I did. Because I did a little research on him, too. And, you know, the house that he lives in, even to this day, has a lot of ghostly happenings going on there with... visitors saying that, you know, they see jewelry moving on the dressers and sheets being pulled off the bed, and his parents had told him that he was visited by his great grandparents when he was born. So I didn't realize, I just thought he was an actor in the movie, but I didn't realize that this, you know, was his past of having this paranormal activity going on in his life.
Yeah, if you get a chance to read Dan Aykroyd's books, they're actually really good. And his family's. They're really good reads, John. I highly recommend them.
Okay, well, hey, I will do that. And once again, have a happy new year and get well.
Thank you so much, John. All right, we got another caller on the line. Who do we have?
Yeah, Mark.
Hi, Mark, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Bob. Calumet Township, Griffith, controversial area politically. But I'm from that area, and I have an authentic sighting to report.
Let's hear about it, Mark.
With authentic witnesses.
Oh, let's hear about it.
December 25th, Christmas. My brother, Rod, he lives in Griffith, and he is also a full-time Hobart fireman. So he picks me up in a Super Duty, and I live between Griffith and Gary. Okay, but in Calumet Township, near the old Ross Elementary School,
sure,
which was torn down, but near the Ross Cemetery. So we come down Elm Street. It was dark to go have Christmas dinner with him, and Evergreen Cemetery, which is a segregated cemetery, Black Cemetery. My brother goes, "What is that?" I go, "In front of us." He goes, "It's a spirit. Look, check it out. We saw an actual spirit, and we drove right through it."
Huh.
Right in front of it. It looked man-like. It walked man-like, and it was white. Okay. And you couldn't see it was right in front of Evergreen Cemetery on Christmas Day.
That's definitely an interesting story.
We were sober.
Sure, okay. that's a good sign.
And that cemetery is a Black cemetery, segregated long time ago. The owners own Ridgelawn Cemetery, and they have a funeral home there. I know that family, the Williams family. So.
Well, that's an interesting sighting, Mark. We appreciate you sharing it with us.
Yeah, I've never seen it. That was I couldn't believe it. Here, check it out. This is funny. I gave it a name. Okay, the ghost of the Colfax liquor store.
That's not bad.
Because the Colfax liquor store is just down the street, and it's a Black cemetery.
A lot of people are haunted by that ghost. I think.
Kind
right
of
there.
Yeah. Well,
those are spirits of another kind.
I figured he went to go get some chills for Christmas and. Hey, why not, right?
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Mark. We appreciate it.
Okay, all right.
All right, guys. Do you want to call in, too, and share your own ghost sightings of your own, or perhaps you just want to call and say hello? Our phone lines are open, 219-845-1100. And if you're listening to us in podcast land and you want to call in during our live segment, you're more than welcome to hear your voice up on the podcast, because I added them in.
And I think we could all say here safely, Bob, if you do want to dabble and maybe tracking some ghosts, probably best to stay sober. I mean, ditch the smoking and ditch the drinking.
Sobriety and ghost hunting. I'm assuming there's probably some unwritten rule about being sober during a paranormal investigation.
Being responsible.
Well, if I may for a moment, just kind of like sidetrack.
Okay.
I would say that's probably one of the more important rules about paranormal investigation, because you're trying to go in with rational thought.
Indeed.
And when you're inebriated, you can't, and you see something, I guess you can't have it 100% credible, because you're under the influence of something. And, you know, there's not every investigation you're going to go on is legit. There's not every place in the world's haunted, or we'd be outnumbered ghosts 20-1, or as Pat calls it, like 1,000-1, I think his ratio is on ghostly, but... Yeah, no, I would say you definitely should probably be.
It's the PSA.
It's a good PSA. Drink afterwards, though. If you and your team want to go out for a beer afterwards, yeah. I'm all for that. You can call me up and I'll go out for a drink with you guys.
Even if you're not out hunting, you just go out there and track some spirits.
Now, when we're doing paranormal talks, that's a whole other thing. Me and Panic will probably be the first ones to be out there having a beer.
I would say so. Hopefully in Wisconsin with those.
I'll be at the Anime Milwaukee. You know I'm going to have a couple beers.
I'm sure in Ohio you'll have a couple beers.
I don't think the Queen of the Night's going to let me do a panel without having a beer in my system first.
Okay,
she tells me it loosens me up.
For panels, it's good to have a drink or two.
Yeah, but no during an investigation. Yeah. You're cutting.
I agree.
There you go. Okay, guys, my last bit of news is actually, I haven't gotten my hashtag panic steak yet. Sorry, guys, new year, not new us. So here at Bob After Dark, I don't prep Panic on any bit of the news that we're sharing. I want his raw opinion about what we're talking about.
All right.
I'm not going to get your hashtag panic steak on Derek. There's not too much to say there. It's a tragedy. He's passed. But I want to hear your hashtag panic steak on the Mantis like humanoid sighting in the same in Chicago.
A giant praying, was that a praying mantis?
It's a half person, half mantis.
Well, that's even more
so
terrifying.
Aware mantis.
Yeah, I don't know. I get, you know, Bigfoot's out there, Nessie and stuff, but a half mantis, half human. This is bizarre and might be the first of its kind. I don't know. I'd like to think maybe there's some of that, you know, that marijuana might have been influencing some of that decision making right there as far as what they were seeing. But you never know. You know, who am I to say? No, that's not out there.
So before I move on with the story, because I did, we had a couple callers and I didn't get a chance to really finish up. The signings were at the Schiffler Park in Chicago,
okay,
which happens to be connected to the Cook County Forest Preserve, which is out by Rosemont, which is where these Mothman sightings have been.
So they wanted some macaroni and cheese from the Rosemont.
That is the claim to fame to Rosemont.
It's good macaroni
it's good
and cheese.
It's good. When they want to make it good mac and cheese, the Hyatt mac and cheese is pretty good. But the same area, same, not the same sighting, but the same area and similar in nature sighting. You think the Mothman sighting and this Mantis sighting are related?
You think they're making a tag team, Mothman and Mantis, coming together to dominate Chicagoland area?
I wouldn't say they're teaming up, but maybe they're both here for a reason.
Moth Mantis?
I mean, yeah, sure. But I don't really know. That's a good question. It's if the billing of weird is kind of building up in the Rosemont area of Chicago, they're picking the best spot. I was talking with Dr. Ben Vanderson about this, and he's investigated the Cook County woods and the parks surrounding it for years, and he was telling me, you know, if the sightings are all legit, then it makes perfect sense for them to be at those woods, because those woods have like kind of a borderline intelligence. It's kind of a weird place. I've been there, and I could tell you that those woods are really weird. So
never know, Bob.
I don't know. Do you think that the Mantis sighting was legit, or do you think it was inebriation?
Giant Mantis. See, I draw the line, I think, of a giant Mantis.
But you're okay with Mothman.
Mothman's fine, but giant Mantis. So it's got to stop somewhere, Bob. This is
my, you know, I'm a believer. I am a hashtag team believer, 100%. I think it's real. I think what they found was legit. My best theory is that interdimensional being, and it just so happened to pick up on the energy that they were putting out for the ritual, and it just kind of homed in on it like a beacon. That's my theory.
You know, there's only one way to find out, right?
I almost went hunting for it. Now, rule number one of investigations, paranormal, cryptid, whatever you want to do. Rule number one, don't go alone. And I could not, it was late at night on the Saturday when the news like broke out, and I was trying to scramble together to figure it out. I was at work, this whole thing. I was almost going out there by myself to go hunt this thing down. But
what happens if you would get in a fight with it or something? You have nobody.
Got it. I don't know. Hope for the best.
Yeah. I mean, Bob versus the Mantis. I'm not ready for that battle just yet.
That's fair. So no on the Mantis. You're cutting your line of believing at the Mantis.
I'm cutting my, yeah. No.
Okay. That's
no
fair.
To the Mantis.
All right. My last story is not as exciting as the Mantis, right, but it's
sure.
A massive 30-ton near perfect spherical stone ball was found in Bosnia.
I believe that. That's fact. Right.
It's
there.
It's real. There's pictures.
Well, if there's pictures, then it must be true.
It's real. That scientists are studying it now.
I draw the line with these perfect balls.
You're like, no perfect ball is no. Spherical ball.
Nope.
So it's 10 foot wide, weighs in at about 30 pounds, and they found it in a forest. Scientists believe it was a part of an ancient civilization. And if it turns out to be man-made, it's going to be the biggest man-made spherical shape ever found.
Even bigger than the Epcot ball.
I don't think that counts. Stone ball. Oh, like a perfect.
All right, well, whatever that's made
of. And made from ancient times.
Interesting. Well, that's the back then.
You know what? I'm glad to see you were excited about this news story, because I was like, does this count? I'm like, yeah, it does, because yeah, my question to you is,
how they make it?
Why? Why did they make a 30-ton, 10-foot-wide, near-perfect spherical stone?
For giant bowling pins, of course. You gotta bowl with something, those giant bowling pins.
I mean, I get ancient cultures built things that would help channel energy, right? That was some of their belief system. So some people would say, you know, they build these obelisks, they build pyramids, or things that would represent, like, things that they would worship, gods, goddesses, whatever. This is just a perfect ball. Why?
Well, I think my take would be here is, can you roll it down? I say start rolling it.
30 tons, man. Start rolling. I mean, and it's old. It is really, really old. So if they start rolling it, it's probably going to, because, I mean, it's cracking. It's not perfect anymore, but at one point.
You know, all good things must come to an end. So I say just
roll the 30-ton boulder.
Roll it where it lays.
Why would you build a perfectly spherical 10-foot-wide ball?
People were bored back
and
then.
Why does it have to be 30 tons?
You know, they had a lot of time on their hands back in the day, so they had time to do stuff like this. Now, we could probably do more stuff like this, but we're too into our cell phones and stuff. So,
well, I mean, no we could time. Build Epcot, apparently. You catapulted the hole in my theory right there. Hashtag panic stick on the 30-foot tunnel.
Yeah, my take is let it roll.
Just roll. Yeah. Instead of storm the lock or storm Area 51, roll the boulder.
That's the weapon you need to get into Area 51, the giant sphere. Perfect sphere.
It's a near perfect sphere.
Thank you.
All right, you ready to talk about the lore of the week?
Let's hear it.
Okay, guys, so this is the part of the show where we talk a little bit about the lore of the week. It's usually topic of discussion or a story, or we theme an entire month. We're just getting off from our December month where we were talking about the spirits of the holidays, dear weird, weird Christmas things that lurk around the holiday season. But now that we're out of the holiday season, we're back to normal, which is talking about whatever might come up.
Yeah.
And because I'm going to be in Ohio kicking off the Bob After Dark tour this week, I wanted to talk a little bit about an Ohio a staple in the paranormal scene in Ohio.
Perfect.
Which is the Ohio State Reformatory.
Let's hear it.
Again, setting of the Shawshank Redemption, I just wanted to point that out.
Tim Robbins, the people were telling
me. Tim Robbins was the other actor in Shawshank. But Morgan Freeman is the one.
Yes, Morgan Freeman. Yes.
So, the year was 1886 and times were much, much different. Imagine people being excited for a new prison to be built. Nowadays, when you hear that a prison's going to be built in your town or your county, people start to protest these. But then there were ceremonies. People wrote letters to politicians to get this thing built. It was supposed to be like an intermediate step between the Boys Industrial School and the Ohio Penitentiary. So it's a little bit above juvenile hall, but it wasn't like straight state prison. And it would basically give younger boys a second chance. So if they committed what do you call it? It's not larceny. It's like not petty. Is it petty crimes? That's like bad, but like not that bad.
Yeah, like a little shoplifting here and there.
Sure. But yeah, it's minor enough to be in juvie. You're going to be in something a little worse. Okay. That's basically what this was built for. Before it was a prison, it was actually a Civil War training camp where something of 4,000 soldiers were trained there. But during the time of the soldiers training at the facility, disease and famine were running rampant during the training session. So a lot of soldiers died during that time before the prison even became a legitimate thing. You follow me so far, Count?
Indeed I am.
So the prison during its time of being open had a lot of prisoners. In the year 1955 alone, there was 5,235 prisoners housed in this one prison during that year in 55. Due to overcrowding and other factors, the prison was basically defunct in 1972 and was fully closed in 1984. The penitentiary was sold in Columbus. It sold to the city of Columbus in 1995. In the prison's long history, something of 154,000 inmates stayed at the prison. And you got to think, minus the people that were there as prisoners, you had guards and you had wardens that also were there, full-time workers, or even slept there during the time. If you go visit the prison now, which you totally can go do, you can go. This place is immaculately cool. There are so many different spots in the prison that you could go visit. You could book it for a private tour for a private investigation. But one of the weird and more creepier sites, and definitely one of the most solemn, is the 215 numbered, not named, grave sites on the premises. You have to understand that prison isn't a very friendly place by any means. And especially in prisons during the 1800s and early 1900s, things were even harder for the living conditions back then. You had victims that would die of disease, things like influenza, TB, and just poor malnutrition. Others died of violence. It is prison, so you know that there is probably some sort of prison violence going on, and finally, suicide. In the hole, especially, I'm going to talk a little bit about the hole in solitary confinement, because that's one of the most hot spots now that, if you go and investigate the prison now, is one of the most habited spots. I'll explain that a little later. But in the hole especially, one inmate was able to hang themselves, one lit himself on fire, and another one walked out of the hole. In with two, he walked out alone. And they said, what happened to the guy? He shrugged his shoulders, and they found the guy partially stuffed in the toilet and stuffed underneath the bed. Dead. Yeah.
Not a friendly place, to say the least.
During that time, various people who would be there would put their intentions versus trying to get out or try to build a better life, put more or less curses on the staff that work there. In 1949, the reformatory's farm boss, wife and daughter, was kidnapped and shot after two parolees got out and threatened revenge against the prison and their staff. One died in pursuit, and the other one turned himself in where he got the electric chair. Another famous story is the warden's wife. They lived on premises. She went to go reach for her jewelry box up in their closet, accidentally grabbed the gun case that was in the closet, yanked it down, and the gun went off and fatally shot her.
Jeez.
And that same warden, not much longer after that, was in the middle of working one day when he died at his desk due to a heart attack.
Just a series of bad luck here.
Yes, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the hole or the shoe or solitary confinement. In the 30s, there was a nasty prison riot that broke out, and eventually when the guards were able to keep people at bay, and this broke out in the East Cell Block, by the way, after they got everything figured out, the guards condemned 120 rioters into 12 solitary confinement cells. So a solitary confinement cell is not very big.
No. Meant just for you to go crazy in.
Imagine shoving 12 people in there.
Insane.
For a week.
Awful.
Without food and water.
Barbaric.
You ready to talk about the spooky stuff that goes on there?
That was bad enough, but go ahead.
Now, before I talk about the paranormal experiences that go on there, you have to understand the reason why it would be haunted, right? Usually I'd pass this over to Anthony and he'd talk a little bit about energies. I'll have to do it for him. So when you have a single concentration of a lot of people suffering, and this both is not only the prisoners, but the people that work there too, they're all basically pumping negative energy out by the throve in this place, making it kind of a hotbed for negative energy. And if you're on the believing side of things, if energy isn't, you know, if energy isn't created or destroyed, right, it just kind of lingers. Mm-hmm. If that negative energy lingers, it's possible that a soul might linger. And if a soul might linger, it's going to eat up that negative energy as a source of nutrition, basically. Yeah. And you're going to have a lot of negative spirits. Some investigators have claimed being punched in the face and shoved by unseen forces. In the great words of Patrick Harrington, microclimate cold spots are found various throughout the prison cells. And even cell doors slam on their own without power being into the place in years. They'll just hear open and close. And probably one of the scariest things, shadow-like entity people walking around.
That's really eerie right there, yeah.
I have a couple of the more famous ghost stories that you can find from the reformatory itself. One is the chair room. And what is the chair room, you might ask? I'll get some photos. I have photos. I'll put them up. The chair room is literally a room with a chair in it. And whenever the chair gets moved to the center of the room, the chair gets shoved back to its original position, as if somebody that was there before wants the chair in the corner and doesn't want it in the center. People have tried removing the chair from the room only for violent outbursts of banging and nasty EVPs to be caught later. They put the chair back in the room and they leave it in the corner.
Interesting.
Now.
So it's attached itself to whatever to this chair.
Right. Now, remember I was telling you a little bit about the warden's wife who died. Her name was Helen. She was the wife of the warden that was killed by accident with the gunshot. She's been known to talk to investigators to this day through EVPs, and people say that you'll know when she's coming by the scent of her favorite perfume, which was rose scented. So if you smell rose perfume, you're probably sure in the presence of Helen. The basement is said to be occupied by a 14-year-old boy who was beaten to death at the prison, unfortunately. And a guard who has given off sinister vibes can also be found present in the basement. And he has a claim to fame for scaring psychics off.
Well, there you go. Probably a lot of them that try to go down there.
Now, his claim to fame, and this is a fun story. They wouldn't name the famous investigator who was there. All they said was the investigator went down there and took his scarf and left.
There, yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. But that's a legit quote from the prison website. This guy, this entity in the basement that takes the form of the guard is known to legitimately cause people that go investigating mad. Finally, one of the biggest places that you can go and investigate is the chapel itself. And they say that is supposedly the nucleus of the activity. Before it was a chapel, it was the site of executions. So during the early days of the prisons, when hangings were, you know, the way of execution or firing squads or whatever, go on down to the chapel. The gallows are awaiting you, or the firing squad is awaiting you. And they're saying that tons of weird, unexplained EMF readings, EVPs, and shadow people walk around there like crazy. So that's just a few of the weird tales that go on from the Ohio State Reformatory.
And they still do tours this place?
They do. I'm actually in talks with another paranormal investigation group about us booking a tour there later this year, because you could book it for an overnight excursion. Bring your own equipment. Come on in.
Jeez, that's got to be something. Well, you know, we were lucky enough to go a little closer to home. Probably not as heinous as, you know, the Ohio one, Crown Point.
I was hoping we'd talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, but nothing really. Of course, it's famous, the Crown Point jail cell, famous for hosting John Dillinger and his breakaway. But, you know, nothing too demonic hangs out over there. You might run into some paranormal activity, of course, but what you're talking about here is just up and beyond the amount of crazy.
Now, the idea is that these stories are, there's a potential that these stories are all really big attractions. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to understand that at the end of the day, the reformatory is still owned by the city of Columbus to this day, and it is still operated by the tourism bureaus and other people that rent it out. People rent it out for movies. Obviously, what we were talking about, Shawshank Redemption was there. You can rent it out for paranormal investigations. You could rent it out probably movie scenes or photo shoots, whatever you want to do. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of have to sometimes take stories of places being haunted with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, the place wants to make their money too. Now, with that said, I am totally 100% a believer. Do I think that this place is probably haunted? Sure. When we talk about places that are potentially have residual energy or ghost sightings or whatever, prisons are a hot spot. Same with like mental institutions, because once upon a time ago, there was no like standard of living in these places. Mm-hmm. So everybody just kind of suffered together. And the suffering there could have been, as I was talking about, like the 14-year-old boy, some of those things were horrendous enough to kill you. So, you know, there's a lot of negative energy that could hang around these places. So do I believe that the Ohio Reformatory, the Ohio State Reformatory, do I believe it's legit? Absolutely. Now, do I believe that some of these hauntings are a little bit more, oh, how do you put it? What's the word I'm thinking of? Panic, help me out here. Like, really, like, exclaimed, kind of built, blown out of proportion,
yeah,
for the sake of...
I get what you're saying.
For the sake of, you know, booking it. To be fair, though, to give them credit, they won me over, and they won over the other paranormal investigator I was talking to, because if these stories are legit, then I'm willing to bet it's probably one of the more haunted spots in the Midwest, if not in the country. Now, there were some TV programs that were shot there. I won't go into detail on who they were, but I watched a couple clips from those to prep me for the episode, and they caught some legitimate stuff on those things that are very much interesting.
A lot of history at this place, I can only imagine.
Yeah, so what's your take on it?
Well, you know, spooky indeed, for sure, and a lot of, you know, terrible stuff that went down the past. And yeah, like I said, a place with enough history is sure going to get some traction there, and I'm no doubt it is haunted. But, you know, I just want to kind of rewatch The Shawshank Redemption now with one of my favorite actors, Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm. Now,
it's a good movie.
I went to go search for... Yeah. I went to go search for ghost stories on set, and I couldn't find any. I was hoping to find, like, Morgan Freeman ghost sighting during The Shawshank Redemption. I couldn't find anything. I mean, it's possible it could have happened, but I didn't find anything written down for show. But that'd be a good story to tell. I mean, there's other places that have been shot in haunted locations where the actor and crews, like, had spooky stuff happen to them. Yeah, so, I mean, it's very plausible. Something you learn in paranormal investigations is that spirits like to interact with things that they're not very familiar with. So if this was the first time that a camera crew went in there, I mean, it's very plausible that the crew from Shawshank had a legitimate, like, horrifying experience there.
You never know.
You never know. Yeah. Do you? So in comparison to the investigation we did at a jail, do you think that Crown Point is a little less terrifying than this Ohio one?
There's backstory. There's more tragic tales, I think, with this, of course, Ohio. But that's not saying that nothing. There has been paranormal stuff going on in Crown Point. It's just, I think, on a different scale, your spirits, you have much more different spirits in Ohio than you say at Crown Point here.
Now, I don't know how many paranormal investigation groups have rented out the Ohio State Reformatory. I could tell you that the one in Crown Point, Don Bernacki was telling us himself, they bring groups in there all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the spirits that are there are probably used to having people kicking around. True. And for the most part, they'll put on a little show. I mean,
they're not like unfriendly spirits or anything like that.
No. The entire time we were there, I never felt uncomfortable once, except when that girl got grabbed, but that's a whole nother story. You had a good experience, though, investigating a jail where you got to play poker with them. They didn't play with us when we were there, but the first time you were there.
Yeah, flip a card over, and they knew how to read them. It's kind of confusing to explain, but trust me on this. They were playing poker. They weren't, like, taking the cards and flipping them.
No, but you were there was some interacting. Guidance yeah, there was some guidance. So, I don't know. Either way, I am very much excited to get... I'm going to go on this investigation and go myself, so I'm very excited to go check that out. Folks, real quick, Panic, do you have anything you'd like to add before we head on out for the
evening? It's good to be back, and I look forward to a brand new year here with you, Bob After Dark.
Oh, thank you very much, and I'm excited to have you. Remember, folks, I will be at OhioCon this weekend, speaking Saturday at 9 o'clock The room name slips my mind. You could check it out on the Facebook page. It has all the information up there. So if you're in the Columbus area, make sure you come out and say hi to me. I'll be there. I'll be in Columbus starting on Thursday. So make sure you get your chance to come see Bob. Thank you so much, folks, for coming out. And thank you guys so much for tuning in to another exciting episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of myself and Panic, I just want to wish you guys all a very good night. To my mom and dad, I hope you guys have sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Thank you so much for watching Bob After Dark, and stick around for the Facebook Live exclusive show, Bob After Dark Unplugged, where we're going to find out if Panic got locked up, what would he have gotten locked up for? What's the crime? Remember, folks, the most important rule of the paranormal and of Bob After Dark is not all who wander are lost. Good night, everybody.
Memoriam Development.